Welcome to the Eastgate Podcast. My name is Rob Woodrum.
I'm Robbie Woodrum.
And we are here to discuss things that pertain to Eastgate and the church and all the stuff that's pertinent to Eastgate.
Yes, welcome back.
And the church. Welcome back. It's been a while since we've done this, Robbie.
I know, it has. I feel like it's been months.
It hasn't, but it feels like that, yes. What was the big reason for the delay?
Well, Irma was a big reason, sort of changed our lives and our daily schedule, and we had company, and we were prepping for it.
Irma, oh my gosh. I mean, so, like, it took forever for this storm to get here. I mean, we're sitting around making preparations and watching the spaghetti models and watching it slowly creep towards us like a monster tiptoeing across the yard. Well, that was a visual image, wasn't it? But
well, anyway. That was, but we also talked about how, you know, before the days of meteorology, if we hadn't known there was anything coming, we wouldn't have known by looking outside.
It we wouldn't have known.
Beautiful, sunny Florida days.
But, well, I mean, that's the funny thing, too. We made all these preparations. Neighbors are boarding up their windows and stuff like that. And, you know, what was the extent of that storm?
Not too much. I remember you talking woke up in the middle of the night and the trees were barely even moving. You were actually a little disappointed.
My hair did get tussled when I went outside, so that was something.
It was a little pitter-patter of rain and a little bit of wind, and that's really about it.
Yeah, we got snubbed by Irma. But you know, our neighbors to the south and to the east of us, they did take the brunt of it. And so, of course, we're concerned for them. But for us, it really wasn't that much of a...
No, in fact, a lot of people came to this area to be safe from the storm.
Yeah. So, I mean, in that sense, it was good for the restaurants and
hotels,
things like that. So,
yes.
Well, one of the things that we wanted to do with the Eastgate Podcast is we wanted to have an opportunity to discuss things that people felt were important or issues that they didn't get a chance to either hear about or consider. And we asked people to write in and give us suggestions. And one of the suggestions that came up was of the subject matter of mental illness as it relates to the church or the Christian response to mental illness.
Right. And we really appreciated the question. And when it was brought up, we thought of our friend Georgina right away, because she has talked to us about that before and how she has learned to deal with mental illness that she has in her family and ways that she's coped with it, and honestly some of the reaction of the church too.
Yeah, and it was a really enlightening conversation that we were able to have with her. We sat down in the coffee house over at Eastgate and just spent about an hour discussing the ramifications of it, the implications of it, the struggles that people, especially people of faith, have as it touches a particularly sensitive topic like this.
Yeah, there's a real stigma attached to it, and it's sort of an unspoken thing that when it is around, it's just hard to talk about.
It is. And so one of the things that we even discussed with Georgina was the idea that to make changes within the church means that we have to start this conversation, like what we did, to sit down and actually begin to talk about it openly, without fear of condemnation or any sort of stigma attached to it, because
like any other illness
that
you may have or a family member may have, it's a real thing. There's nothing to be ashamed of.
Anything that we face in this fallen world is going to come under that category, including hurricanes. You know, we talked about that when the hurricanes came through. And by the way, before we get to this interview, I just want to mention that I've always been fascinated with, I watch all the Weather Channel things and I follow all the different websites that provide the spaghetti models and the various forecasts. And Robbie has noticed that. And so a couple weeks ago on my birthday, Robbie surprised me with an online course in meteorology. So that was really fun. Introduction to meteorology. So that was really cool. So
I thought it might be good for you to have a backup career.
That's right. Because you never know. This may not pan out.
That's right.
So anyway, just like with hurricanes, just like with anything that happens within this fallen world, we need to have a good response, a right response, and a hope-filled response. And that's one of the things that Georgina really was able to give us the tools to begin to start examining this and thinking about this.
Absolutely. In a very clear and concise way and a very self-revealing.
Yeah, it really was a very honest interview. And We're very grateful that she was willing to do that. So the rest of this podcast, we're just going to let that interview kind of play out for you. I think it's a fascinating subject, and I think that all of us can gain some real insight, because it's an important aspect of who we are as the church, how we care for those who are suffering and struggling among us. That's the way in which the kingdom of God affects this world, is that we rightly respond to these things. So I think that there's a lot that we can all gain from listening to this interview. So.
Definitely. We encourage you to listen, and we'll be back at the end.
All right. We are here in the big room with a guest this morning, and we just want to welcome you, Georgina.
Thank you so much, Pastor Rob and Robbie.
And then the first thing we want to do is say, don't call me Pastor Rob.
I'm sorry. It's habit.
I know. I get it.
It's kind of like that yes ma'am, no ma'am.
I totally understand that.
Respect and politeness. We get it.
Good. I just, for the record, disown that. So.
Okay, Rob.
He goes by
there
Rob.
We go.
Got
Very
it.
Good. Hey Woodrum even works, too, for a lot of things. But Georgina, we just really appreciate you coming and hanging out with us and talking about this. We're going to discuss something that is rarely discussed. I would say that in the 20 years that I've been a pastor, this has not been a subject that I've had this kind of a conversation with, which is to my detriment, which is, that's problematic. And somebody had posted it on the Eastgate Facebook page one time when we were asking for suggestions. It was just one of the comments saying, and it wasn't you, but it was somebody else that just said, the mental illness as it relates to the church. And so that's why.
We thought of you.
Oh, thank you.
And the only reason, I'll say
yes, by that place.
The only reason that we thought of you is because you did present something
that's
once
right.
before during our meeting about an organization that you're with and will that you're affiliated with or working with. I don't know if you're affiliated. But
I'm on the board for NAMI, and I do programs and education with them. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, different outreach.
And I'll have you explain that a little bit more as to what it is that we're talking about here. But so we're talking about mental illness in the church. I'm a pastor. I've been a pastor for 20-something years. This has not been something that I've dealt with that much or that in depth. I've been trying to do some research. And as I said, to my own discredit, I realize this is a long time in coming. Tell me why this is an issue for you. Why did this become something that you were invested in?
Well, first of all, I would just agree with you that it's a topic that you never hear about in church. And even in the general public, there is still a great deal of stigma surrounding the topic of mental illness.
Yeah.
And just for example, the NAMI group that I do work with, they've been around since 1979. But everywhere I go to talk, few, if any, have ever even heard of the group. But when I got involved with mental illness and started learning about mental illness was 6 years ago when my oldest son, who is now 26, was diagnosed with bipolar 1 disorder. And it created such havoc in our house that it drove me to learn and educate myself so that I could be better equipped to handle the things that my son was going through, so that I would understand a little bit better what was happening to him. And also just feel like education is power. Knowledge is power. And I wanted to learn as much as I could. And I was blessed to have the time to do that. There are many families out here that if there's a child involved with mental illness, both parents have to work. And so that's that creates very little time for them to learn about mental illness.
Sure.
And my son at age 20, he had always been a bit of a daredevil and kind of an extreme kid. And my husband and I didn't think a whole lot about that because we were both a little bit like that as well growing up. So, when he would want to get pulled behind the golf cart on the skateboard, that was not a surprise, or
when
he would do whatever. But after a little while, some of his stunts, if you want to call them that, started getting kind of outside of the box. We had already enlarged the box for Ryan.
Would feel comfortable for a mom normally, right?
Hey, you know, that we'll give him a little leeway. But then he started doing things outside of that that were very, very dangerous, or that, you know, just so off the wall that it made you stop and think twice. And looking back, it's absolutely amazing that you can justify any behavior.
Wow. Sure.
Some of his things came about his freshman year in college. And so my rationale was, this is a college, you know, thing. They're wild and crazy. He joined a fraternity.
Right. You go out there, you go to college, you're on your own for the first time. So this is when you're going to stretch your wings and do something different.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But he came home from spring break his freshman year and worked at a surf shop that he had gotten a job at just for the week. And he came home and he said, I don't even remember how we got started with it, but he said, I have a fear of large numbers. Mm. And I thought he was kidding. You know, I mean, I started laughing because I was like, you know, okay, where's this joke going? You know, where's, and he was dead serious. So when he told me about that, I started researching fear of large numbers and realized that was actually a thing.
Wow.
And, you know, so I puzzled over that a little bit. He went back to school and he ended up 2 weeks left in the spring semester. And he called me and said, I can't stay here anymore. And I said, you only have 2 weeks of the semester left. What do you mean you can't stay anymore? And he said, I can't do it. I need to come home. I need to get out of here. And you could hear it in his voice that he was, you know, a little upset. He was bothered. I talked to him on the phone for quite a while, and I said, I want you to just think about this a little bit, and let's talk a little bit later this afternoon and see if you still feel this way. Talked to him a couple of hours later, and he had packed everything up and said, I'm coming home. Mm. And I just, my head was spinning. I was like, what is happening here?
Sure.
You know, why is this? And I thought, and I actually said to him, are you uncomfortable in your environment? You know, are you feeling like your, you know, your values or whatever are being compromised?
Because as a mom, you're trying to think through what is he in trouble? Is he, something threatening him?
And he just said yes to everything I said. He said yes. So he came home, and, you know, as he was gone for a while, you know, I didn't really think anything about the large numbers anymore, but he came back home, and he went back to work at the surf shop, and he came home one night suddenly before his shift was over, and he said, I had what he described, and he didn't know what the word for it at the time was, but it was a panic attack.
Mm.
And what had happened, he had pressed a number on the cash register that rang up something like a purchase of, you know, $2 billion or something. That number in his mind represented infinity, like a future thing that there was no end to, and that freaked him out. And so after that, I started researching a little bit more and talking to my mom because my brother's wife had some mental health issues. And I said, you know, I've been reading and I think this might be bipolar disorder. And my mom said, you know, I was thinking the same thing. I've been doing all this reading, blah, blah, blah. And so our progress was very slow. But in the meantime, some other things had happened with Orion. We went to the doctor, and the doctor said, oh, you've got severe ADHD, and you are depressed. So they put him on antidepressants and Adderall, and that turned him into the Incredible Hulk. He was angry. I mean, he was super aggressive. Of course, he was very focused. He was working on a car for like 3 hours solid, which he had never had an interest in working on cars before in his life, and all of a sudden he was, you know, tinkering with the engine, which was kind of weird.
Yeah.
But what I found out later was that those two medications should never be given to a person with bipolar disorder without first having a mood stabilizer type of medication given first. So that made him worse. He had saved up some money, and he decided he wanted that money out. And we told him, you know, save it for a car or whatever. He said, yes, I'm going to save it for a car. I found a car, whatever. He got his money. He went out and bought a motorcycle. So he buys a motorcycle, and, you know, we're kind of like, oh, good grief, why of all things? You know, you have no protection. So that made us even more nervous. And he was getting in fights with his brother. He had moved back home, getting physical. You know, they were getting physical with each other, and it was just starting to get out of control. And one of his friends had been visiting from Texas and came and knocked on my door and said, hey. And I was like, Trey, hey, how are you? Orion's not here. He goes, yeah, I know. Orion's in jail. And I was like, oh, what? What do you mean? I was like,
is this a metaphor or something?
Are you kidding me? And he said, no, I drove his motorcycle back. He was speeding down the highway at 150 miles an hour.
No.
And a policeman stopped him and took him straight to jail. And that was kind of the sharp left turn
right.
At that point. We started really thinking about why is this happening? What is going on? I bailed him out of jail. He got put on probation. So he called me from jail, and I bailed him out, and he came back home. And he started getting concerned about himself. And he said, I don't know what's happening to me.
Mm.
I don't know why I'm doing these things. I don't understand. I feel like such a loser. And he was really, really getting down on himself, and he didn't understand what was going on. And, of course, again, I'm like, you know, you're in college. It's your age. You're just trying to figure out life, and it's
right.
Okay. And, you know, you're great, and here's all your positive characteristics. And, you know, so I'm trying to cheer him up. And we started going to a church about that time, and Orion got very involved with the leadership, and one of the leaders asked if he would like to do a internship down in Miami. He said yes, he would. Well, he took his Adderall and his antidepressants with him and went down to South Miami and ended up calling me saying that he felt like he was being hazed in a fraternity, that he was being given all of these physical labor jobs, having to do it at 2 o'clock in the morning, and then he'd be up at 6 o'clock doing something else. And so I wasn't there, and so I don't know exactly, you know, what happened, but that was his reality nonetheless, and
right.
That was how he felt, and he felt bad, and upset and angry and all of those things, and he was like, I'm going to come home. So he came home and had not slept and was driving from Miami home, and he got stopped for speeding. Well, he was already on probation. And he was very, very freaked out. Somebody had told him that if he was, you know, if he did anything, speeding anything, to violate his probation, that he would go back to jail. Well, that's not true. I mean, he could have just accepted the speeding ticket and gone on about his business, but he called us and he was panicked. Mm. And, you know, I don't want to get out of the car till you get here. And we talked to the officer and we said, we're on our way, you know, just hang on. And we were probably 10 minutes away. Well, we got there and they had already taken him off to jail. And what they were describing to us, the person that they were describing to us that they had been dealing with, did not sound like my son at all.
Yeah.
They said they had to call reinforcements from and get backup. So they're like, you know, 4 or 5 police cars there. You know, you drive by sometimes and you see one person and 5 cop cars there, and you think to yourself, what on earth has happened?
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of what was going on with my kid. But what they told us was he was just screaming and yelling at the cop and cussing at the cop, and that he had, gotten out of the car and was like running around the parking lot trying not to get caught by the police officers. I'm like, this doesn't sound like my child, you know?
Yeah.
So back to jail he goes for that, whatever the charge was. And when I got him out of that, I started calling around to psychiatrists. And I was like, this is what's happening. Something's going on. I'm scared he's going to hurt himself or someone else. Mm-hmm. And I finally got a psychiatrist that said, hang on, I'm going to try to move some appointments around so we can get him in. Wow. And sure enough, he went in, and after a couple of visits, the doctor said that he wanted to do an evaluation. And it was an exam that was an eight-hour exam. But afterwards, the doctor called us back in, and he said, you do not have depression, you do not have ADHD, but you do have bipolar disorder.
Mm. Something that you had suspected early on.
Yes, yes. And so that, on the one hand, that was great to get a diagnosis and understand why this behavior was occurring. But then on the other hand, I knew this was, things were never going to be the same.
Right.
This is going to be the start of a journey that we never expected. Nobody ever, you know, on their own is like, hey, I wonder about mental illness. Let me just kind of randomly study about this. You don't know anything about it. And it's very frightening when you get these diagnoses. And it's also very frightening to see the behaviors that are associated with different types of mental illness. It's something you see in a movie that you would think that's not real. That can't possibly be real. You know, why would somebody endanger themselves? Why would they think that that's okay? You know, that's not how they were raised, you know?
Right.
And at this point, Carl and I, my husband and I, had been Christians at that point for about 10 years. And, you know, we were radically saved. And so when we did get saved, our lives just did a 180.
Mm-hmm.
And we told our kids, okay, you know, all the stuff you've been getting away with that we didn't think was a big deal,
we're changing it.
The party's over. Exactly. And so we kept thinking, you know, where did we go wrong? You know, we got off of this track and we got on this track, and now, you know, we took parenting classes, and, you know, we had our kids in Sunday school, and our children are saved, and, you know, what happened? You know, why did God let this happen? What is, Orion went down to Miami to intern for a church, for heaven's sakes. How did this happen? And we just started questioning all of the effort that we had put to our kids, trying to, you know,
mold or direct,
but it's even more so than that. What I honestly thought, and it kind of sounds crazy now, but I really thought that somehow, by us being Christians and by my children being Christians and living a life that was for the Lord, we were gonna somehow be protected,
exempt from all the suffering.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I got very angry about this because I just couldn't believe that God would do this to our family or my son, and everything just started falling apart. You know, my husband and I were both very stressed out. We also happened to be undergoing an IRS audit at the time.
Goodness.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, my husband went his way and kind of dealt with this his way, and I went mine, and we really didn't talk to each other for a while. And because we didn't have a whole lot to say, you know, right after that diagnosis that the doctor said he has bipolar disorder, 4 days later, the judge sentenced Orion to a month in jail for violating his probation. Mm. So I was experiencing depression and anxiety and worry that I had never, ever experienced in my life. And my husband, who had had a bout of depression many years prior, was also having depression. And he was trying to work, you know, offshore. And in the meantime, I'm just incapable of carrying on a conversation without sobbing, you know. And finally, he said, I'm coming home. And so he came home just to try to help out. But, you know, after I knew this was going to happen, but after a few days being home, he was sucked right back into the drama and the despair and the hopelessness, too. So here we are, two incredibly depressed people wondering what's going on. And I never said, I am going to desert the Lord. I never said, I'm tired of this Christian thing, you know. But I didn't read my Bible for a long time. I just assumed that, you know, God had changed his mind about us, or I had done something wrong that had brought this on, you know, somehow. And for about 6 months, I didn't want to go outside. I didn't want to see anybody. I didn't want to talk on the phone. You know, I eventually went to the doctor and got on antidepressants myself, and that actually ended up being a very smart move, but helped me get up off the floor.
Right.
But, you know, my son's been a year in jail, and then... Or not a year. A month.
Okay, good. Oh, good. Sure, yeah, sure. Like year, yes. Yeah.
But it, you know, all of the thing, the reality of what had happened was there. So we were trying to get him on medication. We were trying to learn about the illness, find out, you know, where to go, what to do, what to expect next, how to handle this the right way. What if we handle it the wrong way? You know, can we make things worse? Can we make things better? Your mind is just going a million miles an hour because it's a brand new topic that you never once thought you would have to deal with. But, you know, about 6 months in, like I said, I remember coming to the point of, where am I going to go? You know, I've been looking for like some other way to deal with this, and there was no other way. And I thought, okay, you know, am I going to turn away from God? Where am I going to go? And I didn't feel like fighting anymore. You know, I had been fighting for so long and angry for so long. I thought, okay, maybe I'll start back reading my Bible, or, you know, doing some devotions, or trying to talk to God without being angry at God. And very slowly, my mood began to change. My perspective began to change. And I felt more empowered that this wasn't going to be the end of the world. This was going to be the beginning of a new normal for us.
Right.
But I realized how much better off my child was when I helped him. When I was well, I could do so much more to help him. I could go talk to people. I just felt more like myself.
Right.
And I think that was a turning point. I never felt connected. This is while we were living in Pensacola, and I never felt connected to a church there. Thinking back, that may have been on purpose. I think God may have never really let us get settled because that's not where he wanted us to settle. But I got involved in the NAMI group there.
Okay.
I took a class called Family to Family, and it was... Exactly the education that I needed.
All right. Before you go on with that, then tell me what NAMI is. We need to get everybody up to speed. Anybody who wasn't here when you presented it.
NAMI stands for the National Alliance on Mental Illness.
Okay.
It is an organization, a nonprofit organization that was formed back in 1979. A few people sitting around somebody's kitchen table discussing problems with mental illness. Where do we go? What do we do? How do we bond together for support? And now it's nationwide. And the organization provides education, like the family-to-family class or other educational classes. They provide support groups for both family members and for what they call consumers because they consume services. Okay. They advocate at the state level for changes in legislation. And they just kind of lead and bring awareness to mental illness. One of the things they do nationwide that is actually coming up is called NAMI Walks. And September the 30th, they will be having at St. Andrews Park. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the actual name of that
St. Andrews State Park?
Yeah. No. In downtown St. Andrews.
At the marina.
Under the Oaks.
Yes. The Oaks. I think that under may be the name of the park.
Well, there's Under the Oaks, but there's also the one that's down there at the end of...
That's what's called Under the Oaks.
That's Under the Oaks?
This is the one that's close to the marina. The one that's closest to
that
the
is,
marina.
I
think that's what it's called, or the Oaks. I can't remember.
But they have a walk there. Last year when they did their walk, we had the sheriff there to be a guest speaker. We had the mayor there to be a guest speaker. And both of them actually shared some of their experiences with mental illness.
Wow.
And the sheriff, we kind of have gotten involved with the law enforcement because there's a program called Crisis Intervention Training that a lot of the officers go through now. And NAMI helps teach that class and try to explain to officers the whole point of it. It's a 40-hour class. They take off from their work and they do it for a week. And they learn about how dealing with someone who has a mental illness is very different than dealing with anyone else, mm-hmm. that you can approach them and handle them very differently, that they actually can make the problem worse if they go in with an aggressive behavior or something like that.
Well, and here's the thing. I mean, honestly, I mean, just an initial response to somebody's behavior being odd, I mean, honestly, the first thoughts are to drugs. Like this person, I mean, I just even wonder that, like in your experience, did you at one point think, has my son gotten into drugs? Or I mean, did that question go through your mind, or did you just know to dismiss that automatically?
No, that was actually an issue.
Okay.
And it's a very common issue, what they call a dual diagnosis. And actually half of the people who have a mental illness, especially bipolar disorder like my son, are involved with drugs. And it's usually an effort to self-medicate. They're either on the manic side where they've got way too much energy, they have the racing thoughts that constantly occur, and they're trying to calm, you know, their mind a little bit. And then, of course, on the other side, if they're depressed and they don't want to get out of bed, they're trying to get something that's going to lift them up. During the time where I was so upset and angry, I would sit on my floor in the middle of the night and just cry because I knew my son was out there doing something. I just didn't know where he was, couldn't find him, didn't know what he was doing. But he would go for a few days, you know, with the 3-day high, and then come back and sleep for 3 days. And we knew that there were drugs involved. We didn't know to what extent until we started, you know, asking him some questions and hearing a little bit from his friends. Mm-hmm. And, you know, later on, my son and I, thank God, we have always had a great relationship, both of my kids and I. And I did homeschool them for a few years, and that really enabled us to build a really firm foundation. And another time when my son was on probation, he decided he was feeling lucky and was going to take all of his money and go to a casino. But he was on probation. He wasn't supposed to leave the county. So at that point, we decided to bankrupt him. And actually, he went willingly because we told him, you know, this is going to be for his good and it would be this instead of jail and that kind of thing. Right. So he ended up in a psychiatric hospital for a month. And at that point, you know, he was detoxed. You know, there was no drugs, no alcohol, no nothing. But during that time, he got off of the street drugs and got on some very potent, powerful psychiatric drugs. And in the 1 month that he was down there in that hospital, he gained 30 pounds.
Wow.
And that is, unfortunately, a side effect of many, many psychiatric medications, the atypical antipsychotics that are the newest generation of those drugs, a lot of them cause weight gain. Mm. And so it's this horrible, you know, trade-off of trying to get your mind stable, but having all of these, you know, the weight gain makes you more miserable and you can no longer do things you used to like. I mean, he was very avid water sports and, you know, surfing and all of that kind of thing. And it just became impossible for him to really do that and enjoy that. Mm. But for a long time, Orion fought the drugs and the alcohol. And I finally remember putting my foot down. You know, you're so afraid to go to an extreme because you're afraid you're going to drive them out onto the street and they're going to be living under a bridge or whatever. And, you know, my husband and I went to a couple of psychiatrists and psychologists, and some of them were, you know, all about tough love, you know, just, you know, stop helping him and let him go. And my husband and I just couldn't, those were two things that we decided we were going to try to help with. We were going to try to keep him out of jail and we were going to try to keep him from being homeless. And, you know, Orion still battles a little bit with the alcohol, you know, but the last 3 years we moved from Pensacola to here. And so he left a lot of the environment that was so bad for him and came here. He was very angry when he first moved here, and very slowly, you know, up until the point we are now, we're actually at a good place now that he has learned. Even though he's not really surfing a whole lot, he's fishing. And he has learned so much about the, you know, little details of fishing. I mean, he knows so much about it, and he loves it. You know, he will pay attention to other people. He knows that if he goes out boating, somebody's going to be drinking. So he pays close attention to that, and he has learned that sometimes he can't even start that activity. Like if he knows they're going to go sit around a campfire and drink and the event starts at 6 o'clock, he's like, yeah, I'm not going to go because by midnight, you know, I'm going to be in bad shape. When we moved, he did end up giving up the drugs, and as far as I know, but he still struggles with the alcohol, but I think that's pretty normal. Again, for someone this age, they want to be like their friends. They
want to. Big part of that is feeling left out, I think.
Absolutely. Being left out. He didn't want his life to be different from everybody else. He wanted to be able to do exactly what they did. Sure. And by golly, every time he tried it, he ended up in really bad shape and the rest of them were fine, you know? And he finally put two and two together of, wait a minute, I'm the only one ending up in jail. Something is awry here, you know? Exactly. I don't want to be there, but the last time that Orion was in a courtroom, the judge said, listen to your parents, listen to your friends. Jail is no place for someone with a mental illness. And that really had an impact on him.
That's
awesome.
And, you know, one of the other things that one of the judges said was, stay away from the gray, because he always was tempted to put his toe over that line and just kind of see what was over there and take a risk.
How much he could do, how much he could get away with, even in himself. And
he had been like that all of his life, you know?
Sure.
But those comments, you know, stuck with him. And as he's become more clear-headed, you know, he realizes how important that is and that if he wants to remain well, he is going to have to live a little differently than other people, but that it's worth it.
Right.
Because getting, you know, what I call getting into your God-given groove, you know, that's where all Christians want to be.
Right.
You know, that's where you're humming. That's where you
stable,
feel...
stable, coping life.
Yes, and you just feel so at peace and so joy-filled because you know that you're doing what it is God wants you to
do. There's a sense of fulfillment, I think, in that, fulfillment of our purpose, knowing that and being able to live.
But just to clarify, so we're clear, you know, so we know what we're talking about. When you talk about your God-given groove, you are not talking about a life that's free from any difficulties or troubles.
No.
Your God-given groove is something that's taking place while you're going through the difficulties of life.
Absolutely.
And that's one of the things that I think we want to talk about, too, is that part of the reason you discussed it as being the stigma of issues that deal with mental health. And that's part of the problem, I think, that's present there. That in the church, reason that there's a stigma, and I don't think anybody would ever vocalize it that way. I don't think anybody would ever come up and say, oh, well, aren't you cursed of God, et cetera. Exactly. But there's an underlying mentality that we're Christians, we've given our lives to Jesus, that means everything's supposed to be reshaped into something good, and that means only good things are coming our way from this point on. And so when something goes wrong, or when we're confronted with something like this, which is big, I mean, this is something completely out of most people's wheelhouse. I mean, I don't know many people that are going to say, oh, I know exactly how to deal with this.
You don't grow up knowing that unless, I suppose, your parents are psychiatrists or psychologists or something. Sure. It's something you have to make yourself educated
about. And so this is something that so far, this isn't like, you know, even getting a cast on your arm or something like that. This is something that delves into realms that are very ethereal in many ways. And so the automatic assumption begins to develop, well, what did they do wrong? You know, or what did I do wrong? What did I do wrong that makes me go through something like this? Why do I have to suffer? And I'm just wondering, I know you expressed that as something that you struggled with yourself in your interaction with the church.
Yes.
Did you feel that reinforced, or did you feel something different? I don't want to feed you an answer.
No, I think that, you know, first of all, you're very selective about who you talk to.
Sure.
Because you don't have all the answers, and whoever you're talking to has fewer answers than you do. Mm-hmm. And you're not sure how they're going to act. Or maybe you've heard somebody say, yeah, that guy that got arrested on TV, he had bipolar disorder. And so, you know, they just assume that anyone who has bipolar disorder is a maniac,
right,
you know, on the run with a gun and wants,
right,
to kill people. And so assumptions are out there running wild without education. People just assume things. But the few people that I did tell initially, they had a very nonchalant kind of attitude about it, about, oh, yeah, my brother had that. Be sure he gets on his medication.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they just think that it's like a headache where you take a pill and you're better.
Right.
And that's not it at all. And as a matter of fact, you know, the pill might help ease your symptoms, but the medications do not make the illness
go
disappear.
Away. Right.
That's right. It just hopefully makes you able to cope with what's going on.
Mm.
But the more educated I became and the more I saw that my education benefited my child, the more vocal I got, the more secure I became in sharing this. And I remember clearly one day I was having lunch with friends and I said, you know, I was thinking that, you know, this should never happen to my child, how unfair it was. And I began to think, wait a minute, if Jesus, you know, suffered and died on the cross, and what makes me think that I'm going to be spared
except
something like this, you know? And, you know, my phrase that I used for a while is, bad things happen to good people every day.
Right on.
That's right.
And that's just a fact of life. And I just started getting comfortable with what I told you a long time ago. I started getting comfortable with things not being okay.
Right.
Understanding that's the world we live in, you know, and people have that fight or flight response, and I definitely have the fight response. So, you know, the more I thought about that, the more angry I got about how, you know, the devil was trying to rob us of our joy, you know, living in Christ, and how he wanted me to think about all the negatives associated with this and totally dismiss anything positive. And, you know, most people would say, how could you get something positive out of that? But honestly, the people that I have met through this, you know, the track that my life has taken, I actually look back on it and I'm like, I'm so happy that, you know, all of this happened, because it matured me as a Christian, as a human being. It made me more compassionate towards people who were, you know, living under bridges or standing out, you know, on the street for a handout. But
let me ask you this too. This is, we've primarily been talking about bipolar disorder, which used to be called manic depression, right?
That's correct.
But what kind of scope really is mental illness, and what types of other things besides bipolar does does NAMI even address or include in what would be considered mental illness?
Well, that is a good question, because most of for lack of a better word, say my expertise is in bipolar disorder. Mm-hmm. That's where I have focused most of my education and learning.
Sure.
But NAMI addresses all mental illness. And we're talking, you know, people often think about bipolar disorder or schizophrenia.
Yeah.
Or schizoaffective disorder is something that you hear people talk about now. And that is a combination of bipolar and or mood symptoms with psychosis.
Uh-huh.
So that's kind of a combination of those types of things. But, you know, mental illness is anything that affects the brain.
That's what I wondered. So like depression would be included?
Mm-hmm. PTSD.
Anxiety.
ADHD. Ooh, anxiety. Okay. OCD. The whole veterans issues with the PTSD in this area is a big one. And NAMI is actually in the process of trying to develop a group specifically for them. But even autism. I mean, a lot of people... Anything that affects the brain is a mental disease or a mental illness. And head trauma can even affect
the brain. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So what we discovered was it really doesn't matter what label you put on it. The signs of mental illness are the same. There's so much overlap. You know,
sure.
You're going through the same type of adjustments regardless of what it is. And I was thinking not too long ago that if I wrote about a book about, you know, dealing with bipolar disorder, I would call it "Why Didn't I Get a Casserole?"
I love it. I mean, it's
an illness, and you have loved ones that are, you know, in jail and coming out, or in the hospital or coming out, or have disappeared and they come back. Whatever, there is tremendous stress in the family, and nobody seems to want to. That's another issue with the church. You know, that's something that people don't ask for help with, that because they don't feel like they're worthy of, you know, some help. They always think, oh, well, you know, that person needs it more than I do,
or I should be able to do this myself, get over it myself.
Exactly.
Well, I guess the thing to me then is, like, when you look at that definition of it, who doesn't suffer from that, either themselves or a very close family member? I mean, I know just between Rob and I, my stepdad has been diagnosed with bipolar. They called it manic depression back in the 70s when he had it. And I just remember he always had to have his medicine. And my mom would talk about, you know, how he was a very difficult person to deal with when he didn't have his medicine. So I've heard of that forever. I know Rob's dad dealt with deep depression. I just feel like this is crazy that we try to sweep this under the rug or act like physically or emotionally we should be able to handle this or figure it out on our own and be ashamed in any way to talk about it.
It's come a long way.
I think so too.
But there's still a lot to be done. And the stigma associated with it, it still exists.
Mm-hmm. It does. And in the brief research I did before we sat down here is that according to these numbers, and I have no way of testing the veracity of these numbers, but they said one quarter of the United States population suffers from some form of mental illness.
That is correct.
But then it also, another aspect of this was that over 50% of those who identify as evangelical Christians believe that prayer and scripture alone are sufficient in dealing with any issues regarding mental illness. So that means that the majority of those within the church who are either suffering this or know of people within their families or have loved ones that are suffering with this, make the assumption automatically that this is not something to be dealt with medicines and that's the stigma.
Help.
There's the problem. That's what creates the stigma, is that there's an assumption then that this is some sort of spiritual problem that's got to be either dealt with, or we're doing something wrong, or I've done something wrong.
That's a real problem. I mean, that's really where people wrestle, I think, because you do believe in your mind, you often think that I did something wrong, or I should be able to overcome this. I should be able to pray this illness away.
Right.
People will be like, this is, you know, you have, there's a demon in you.
Right. Mm.
You know, you're demon possessed, and, you know, we'll just pray over you and
cast
hold this
a demon
cross
out.
And we're going to cast out the demon. And quite frankly, I absolutely believe there's a spiritual element to mental illness, just like the devil uses any of our weaknesses against us.
Sure.
That is certainly an area, you know, the mind. I mean, we're supposed to be renewing our mind in Christ, but if your mind is disordered,
right,
you can't even think straight.
Sure.
So that affects everything else. And
sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that is a real problem. And it's amazing to me coming here, the number of people whom I have met who have said, yes, I have a relative with mental illness. And once you learn some statistics, it's 1 in 4, like you said, is living with a mental illness. Mm. Half of those people that are diagnosed, even not just within the church, but they're not getting help. Half of them are not getting help. And that's a real shame, because there is help out there, but you don't know that there's help out there until you start looking for
it. Right.
And as I talk to people within the church about mental illness, it's so amazing when we start talking and they realize how similar our experiences are. And it's kind of like when you first become a Christian and you talk to somebody about their experience of coming to Christ, you realize that even though you have a very unique situation that's catered or tailored to you, your experiences are very similar.
Right.
You know, the things that you get through. And it's kind of that way with mental illness. You know, you're like,
and it creates
oh my
a sense
gosh.
Of fraternity even in that. Like,
absolutely.
Like we're all in this together. We experience these same things.
And as serious as this is, we have discovered that humor helps so much. I mean, it's real and it's not going to go away. And if we can laugh about it sometimes, it's just like, you know, it's okay. We're going to make it through. You know, whatever comes our way, we'll deal with it when it gets here. And we'll trust that God is fully aware and that.
That's awesome.
I love that.
I do too.
You know, it'll be okay. And I only say that because I've done the exact opposite before. I've crawled in that hole and I've not spoken out, and I've been in a deep, deep state of depression and despair and hopelessness. And that I sure didn't do anything there. I mean, that wasn't the way to go, clearly.
Right.
So, you know, you have a choice and you have to decide how you're going to attack this and how you're going to, you know, live with it and deal with it. And something that I've told my son and other people is, just because your life is not what you thought it was going to be, doesn't mean it can't be great.
Right.
It's just going to be different than you
thought.
Right.
Absolutely.
And I'm like, yes, you do have to work harder than other people, but so what? So you have to work a little harder. That's okay. And, you know, with my son specifically, I can just say, you know, everybody's life is a book. Everybody's life is a story. And I said, you know, you've got some really, really exciting chapters in your book. And, you know, he would smile about that. And I'd say, man, that's a lot better than having a boring story, isn't it? And he'd be like, yeah. And, you know, just knowing that there's more for the Christian than what we see here, that we live in the fallen world. And that means we're going to have illnesses of all kinds, including mental illness.
Absolutely.
And when you recognize that that is just an illness, just like any other illness, it's not so difficult to talk about. And that is the point that each person has to get to in their own mind, in their own time, in their own way, just getting to that level of acceptance. And it's hard to do that on your own. Very
and that's
hard.
Where, as a church, as a community of believers, it's important for us, I would think, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I would think that it's important for us then to develop an acceptance of this concept into the community philosophies. And,
yes.
And, you know, be accepting of people regardless of where they're at. And listen, somebody's undergoing mental illness isn't going to necessarily know how to create the proper boundaries in relationships or whatever. We've got to be able to, you know, be okay with that.
That's right.
And also, I was thinking about this, that we have to develop a, it's a word that I read, a theology of suffering. We've got to get get away from what I consider to be a false notion that once you become a Christian, everything falls into place and life just gets better and better and better, and recognize that for the Christian, we're called to suffering. And just because, like you were saying, and that applies to everything. That's not even just mental illness. That's all of these difficulties and struggles that we have in life. Just because we're going through this, just because this now is part of our story, doesn't mean that story has to be terrible.
That's right.
That Christ meets us in the middle of that. If there's anybody who's supposed to know how to suffer, it should be us as believers to
exactly.
know how to connect with God. I didn't mean to take over what you're
no,
saying.
No, I'm happy to hear that. I totally agree with that. And like you said, it's a mindset, and it's an acceptance, and it's a, go ahead.
And a willingness then to point people towards the help that's available.
I was just going to say, we have to be careful not to be afraid to bring that up or feel awkward about, do you think there might be a mental illness issue here? And not
and to be ready with resources or direction to point somebody to get the help that's needed. That
Absolutely.
It's not always going to just be scripture reading and prayer. Nothing wrong with that. Those are good things and beneficial to us, but that's not necessarily a catch-all. You wouldn't say that to somebody who's just broken their arm. You know, well, just pray and read. Well, there's some people who would say that, but we don't want to go there. But but that's the whole thing. Is
professional help.
Yeah, to recognize that. So if somebody's coming to you concerned that they've got a family, or they themselves are looking at things and come to that point, even like your son, like, I can't control this. I don't know what's going on. Where would you send them? What would you do?
Well, first of all, just number one, what you just said, acknowledging that there's something going on here. And you can go to your doctor and get a recommendation for a psychiatrist. Like my son did that 8-hour evaluation in order to determine, you know, whether or not he had bipolar disorder. You can come to me for support. I would direct you to NAMI. There are a lot of organizations out there that are helpful to people. And even within our community, within Bay County, there are so many things available. And, you know, the doctor you've got to have for the medication and the just the medical side of it, you know, somebody to help you with that side. But NAMI helps with resources. NAMI helps with education. NAMI helps with support. And I would say, make that part of your family. You know, make NAMI part of your family. And
so if a person goes to NAMI, NAMI.org, they could find the list of resources locally, even?
Well, one of the questions that will be on the NAMI.org site, which is for the whole nation, will be, you know, find your local chapter.
Yes.
But I can tell you right now that there is a NAMI Bay County, and that actually is the website, NAMIBayCounty.org.
Okay.
And that will give you information about the local meetings, anything that's going on. We do meet once a month, and we have a program that everybody comes, you know, the whole family comes.
Is that for those who are suffering as well as families?
Yes.
All for one?
That's one thing I love about this organization is that it caters to both the person suffering or living, I should say, with the mental illness and with the family members. It affects everybody.
Sure.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Yeah.
And we meet once a month. We have the program, some sort of educational program. Last month, we did something really fun and did art projects. We had an art therapist come. And I didn't even know there was such a thing. See?
That's awesome.
Still learning. But we have a meal together, and then we break off into support groups. But there's a peer-to-peer support group that meets every other week. That's just for the consumers, just for the people living with mental illness. And we are getting ready to start a weekly support group for family members. We meet every month, but we know that is just not enough. And the group is growing. And so we feel like we really need to get going on the once a week thing. The family to family class, I've been certified to teach that class. I taught it just about 6 months ago, and we were about to start another class on Saturday. Not Saturday, Sunday. It's a 12-week class. It's very intense, but you will walk away feeling like you're capable of handling this. You know, they teach you to work through all the different stages of, you know, the initial crisis and shock and chaos that's going on all around you, and then, you know, learning to cope with it. How do I deal with this on a daily basis? I've accepted that this is real for real now, you know, and how do I live my day with this illness. And then finally, you know, you get to that point of acceptance and you say, I'm ready to help other people do this. And NAMI does all stages of that.
That's so awesome.
It's really a great organization. And the that people here great. Are just, they're awesome people. They're really good people.
That's wonderful. Well, there's a good resources and directions to go for anybody who is struggling with that or has a family member. Georgina, we appreciate you
yes,
so much coming and sharing this with us. And this is a big
me.
Topic. I feel like we could do this again sometime and expand it out, talk about it. But we really appreciate you taking
yes.
the time
well,
to do
I appreciate
this.
Appreciate you having me. I think I told Robbie when she asked me to come down, I said, oh, good, I get to talk about mental health and Jesus, two of my favorite topics.
Yay!
That's wonderful.
So I appreciate being here. Thank
All
you.
Right.
Thank
God bless you.
You.
Well, we just really appreciate Georgina being so transparent and honest with us. That's a tough subject, especially as it's dealing with a family member like that, to be able to open up about. And just
absolutely.
Really
it's very painful
that.
And difficult. It's hard to see a loved one go through it
mm-hmm.
and learning how to cope with it. Also, I did want to mention, too, that she talks about NAMI a lot in the interview, and she's on the board there, I think she said. But they also have a resource network called NAMI FaithNet, and it's for people of all faiths that want to encourage people and promote the role of spirituality in their recovery journeys with people that have mental illness and their families. So that's another
Family
thing
members
that
as
can
well, yeah.
really would be a great resource for us.
So again, if there's any suggestions that you might have for topics for upcoming podcasts, please let us know. You can drop us a line at eastgatepcb@gmail.com or go to the Facebook group for Eastgate and let us know there.
And we'll try to get another podcast out sooner rather than later, and we'll probably have a guest like every other episode or something
sure.
like that.
All right. Well, I think that wraps it up for us. So for us as Eastgate, we're learning to love God. Learning to love others.
This is our story so far.
God bless you guys.
God bless you.